From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Hey everyone, we have a great show for you today. We're going to be talking, like we often do, about a future saint. This one is the Little Cajun Saint. Charlene Richard will be joined by Jim Belloy to talk to us about this future saint's canonization path. We'll also be talking about something that happened, according to legend, on August 5th in the year 352, which was the miracle of the snow that occurred in Rome that paved the way for the building of the great Basilica of St. Mary Major. And we've got that feast day upon us this week, so it's a perfect opportunity to talk about Our Lady of the Snows. And check out my television series, They Might Be Saints. It airs every weekday on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. This Wednesday coming up, we have the episode on Rhoda Wise. In Canton, Ohio, Rhoda Wise was well known as a mystic with many spiritual gifts and healing miracles. One of them was experienced by Rita Rizzo, the future Mother Angelica. I'll be there to relate her remarkable story, so check that out. They Might Be Saints, Rhoda Wise, on Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And my other series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. This is my travel series where I travel all around the world to shrines and other places of great miracles in Catholic history. For this week, I'll be looking at the apparition of Our Lady of Laylow. I'll be investigating the supernatural experiences of Benedicta van Querelle. In the year 1664, the Virgin Mary gave her messages about prayer for the conversion of sinners and visited her throughout the rest of her life. And this is one of the most highly approved cases of Marian apparitions in history. So check this one out, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, Laylow, which airs on Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Later in the show, we'll be talking about the 365 Days with Mary Project. This is where we line up the Marian devotion of the day. You all know Fatima, May 13th, and Guadalupe, December 12th, and Our Lady of Lourdes, February 11th. But there's a different Marian devotion for each and every day of the calendar year. So for today's date, we've got the Life-Giving Spring in Zeytinburnu in Turkey from the year 460. The might-be saint of the day is Blessed Arcangelus Piacentini. The miracle of the day is the liquefaction of the blood of St. Lawrence in Amisano in Italy. And the question of the week, has there ever been a canonized Italian royalty? That's a tricky one. I'll see what I can do with that question. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening all the world and those things that relate to miracles. And we had kind of an interesting situation. I posted this to my Facebook page this past week. There was reports of a miracle of a one of those touring Fatima statues in Northeast Ohio. And the story goes, or there's the question of, did the eyes of a blessed statue come to life and then close? Some people who witnessed the event and it was captured on camera are calling this a miracle. And there was some various people who saw this phenomenon, and it happened at the Basilica of St. John the Baptist in Canton, Ohio. And this International Pilgrim Virgin Mary statue of Our Lady of Fatima is currently making stops across Northeast Ohio and was on display there that day. And this is one of these statues that travels all around the country. And the statue travels the world, actually, spreading the message of Our Lady of Fatima. And this sculpture was commissioned in 1947 following Sister Lucia's specifications. She, of course, is one of the three shepherd children of Fatima, reported seeing those visions of Mary in 1917 and revealed secrets of hell and prophecies of war and the need for mankind to stop offending God and make reparation. So there were pictures that were captured of the eyes opening and closing. And you can go to the Facebook page of the Miracle Hunter to see this post of this story. It's quite interesting when they put the statue images side by side with the eyes open and the eyes closed. I look at it and I say, this is either a miracle or a hoax. Unfortunately, we only have one photo to go by, but absolutely amazing. And the pictures were shared with Fox 8 News as the sculpture was on display at St. Andrew's in Parma. And it was said that she was taking pictures to post on social media when she saw the eyes. And the quote is, "I took it and I thought, that's really nice. And I took one more to be sure. When I looked at it, the eyes were closed. And I said, wow." Katie believes Mary is again sending a warning to the world. And for skeptics, she has a message. "For those who believe, no proof is necessary. For those who don't, no proof is possible." She said, "It's faith and I believe." The statue will remain on tour in Northeast Ohio through August 21st. Yeah, check out that story and look at that photo. Tell me what you think. It's kind of fascinating. Perhaps it's a doctored photo, but perhaps it's something more. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week. We look at the trivia question of the week and see who has the fastest answer. And people who write in the fastest will get the image of the face of Mary. Now, last week we asked a question about St. Titus Brandsma. It was the topic of last week's interview questions. And we asked the question, what country is he born in? And the answer was Netherlands. And I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, but his name originally was Anno Sugerd Brandsma, and that was his name in the Netherlands. And writing out the correct answer was Frank Ledenhoff. So thanks so much, Frank Ledenhoff, for writing in with that answer. You're the winner of the prize, the image of the faces of Mary. For this week's question, we are talking about Charlene Richard, who died at the age of 12. If canonized, she will be the youngest American saint. The question is, who is currently the youngest American saint? If you think that you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe you'll be the one with the correct answer. Answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Claudia McAdam about the miracle of the August snow, talking about that miracle that led to the building of the Basilica of St. Mary Major in Rome. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Did you know that every August 5th in the Basilica of St. Mary Major, white rose petals are dropped from the ceiling of that most famous of all basilicas? And why do they do that? What is the point of this tradition? Well, it commemorates the snow miracle that happened in the year 352 in Rome. Where that outlined the building, or outlined the area that would become the building of St. Mary Major. We're so excited today to talk about Our Lady of the Snows and a brand new book that's just come out from our Sunday visitor, that is The Miracle of the August Snow. And we're joined today by the author, Claudia Cangila McAdam. Welcome to the program today, Claudia.
Hi, Michael. Thank you so much.
Well, I was excited to see your book come out, and this is a story that not many people know, and I did an Explore episode of this on EWTN, and I think it's a fun one to do a book and a children's book about, as your book is, The Miracle of the August Snow. What would you say inspired you to pick up this story?
You know, every August 5th, I would read in my devotional and at Mass, would be reminded that it's the feast of the dedication of the Basilica of St. Mary Major. And so it's a feast day for a building rather than a feast day for a saint. And I was always intrigued by, well, why do we honor this particular dedication of this particular basilica? And so doing some research, I just kind of fell in love with the whole story of how that came to be, the legend of how that church was built, and the wonderful history surrounding it, the relics that it holds, the special things that have occurred in this church. And when I found out about this miraculous snowfall that the legend says happened on this very hot night in August in the mid-350s, the snowfall that marked the location where this church would be built, I thought this would be great to write about. The Blessed Mother had made an appearance in a dream to three people, actually, as the legend goes, a wealthy couple who wanted to leave their money to the church but didn't know the best way to do that. So they were praying to the Blessed Mother for her intercession, for guidance as to what they should do with their money. And on the night of August 4th, to each of them in a dream or a vision, she appeared, as well as appearing at the same time to the Pope at the time, Pope Liberius. And she indicated in this apparition that in the morning they would find snow on the ground, and where that snow was, there was to be built a church. And so they get up in the morning, and apparently there's snow on the Esquiline Hill, and that's where the building of the Basilica took place, and that's where that church stands today.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. It's a great church to visit, and a great tradition that we have surrounding this. And so you're captivated by this story, this legend of the Virgin Mary appearing and leaving this outline in the snow and giving some very direct instructions to John and his wife, the wealthy couple who wanted to give away their money, and Pope Liberius, who wondered why he was inspired to go to the top of this hill in the middle of the summer. And so the miraculous snowfall led to the building of this incredible basilica, according to the story. And so you put together this book, and when you consider this book or your efforts to make this book, who are you hoping would pick up this book, The Miracle of the August Snow?
You know, I have been writing professionally my entire adult life. I have about 30 published books out there. Most of them, they're all for kids, and about half of them are faith-based, published by Catholic publishers, and I'm really honored to be able to work in this particular space. And my goal is to, when I write for young audiences, is to craft a story in which my readers can step into the sandals, shall we say, of characters who might have lived at that time that the story took place. So with this story of the Miracle of the August Snow, I crafted an historical fiction story that's a chapter book. So I've written many picture books, a couple of young adult novels that are biblical historical fiction, but this was my first chapter book, and I wanted to appeal to the early readers, the 6, 7, 8-year-olds, to read a story that had characters in it that are about their age, maybe a little bit older, that they are part of this story. So my book starts off with it being this very hot and humid day in Rome in the mid-350s, and these twin boys, their names are Ignatius and Paulus, and their parents live and work in the home of this wealthy couple, Master Giovanni and his wife, Mistress Julia. And there's a couple of storylines going along in this book. That's the beauty of being able to write a chapter book, is you can delve into more than one storyline. And in this story, the boys are kind of teased and bullied by the neighbor kids, but they stand together against that teasing. But when the heat rises, so do tempers, including the two twins, Ignatius and Paulus, who get into an argument, a disagreement, and a wedge is driven between them, and it doesn't seem like anything can heal their spirit, their split. And it might actually take a miracle to do so, and that's where the August snow comes in, because on the hottest night of the year, when the Virgin Mary answers that longtime prayer of Giovanni and Julia with the surprising snowfall in summer, she makes a request that church be built there, and it's something that Ignatius and Paulus realize they can help fulfill that desire of the Blessed Mother, but only if they put their disagreements behind them and learn to work together. So that's the storyline wrapped around the miracle of the August snow.
Amazing. We're talking today with Claudia McAdam about her brand new book, The Miracle of the August Snow. And of course, we're talking about this right as we're around the feast day of Our Lady of the Snows. And I don't know if you've been to the St. Mary Major Basilica there in Rome, but when I visited it, it really blows me away how amazing it is. And it's so fun that there's this miraculous backstory that led to the building of this basilica. Tell us a little bit, you talked a little bit already about some of the amazing relics that they have there and other aspects of this basilica that visitors to Rome would be interested in.
That church is also called the Bethlehem of Rome because there's a relic of the manger that Jesus laid in there in that basilica. So it's a very popular church on Christmas for that reason. And in fact, St. Ignatius of Loyola celebrated his first Mass there on Christmas Day in the year 1538. In addition to that, there's the icon painting that is said to have been done by St. Luke. Don't know whether that's true or not. It's called the Salus Populi Romani, the salvation of the Roman people. And that icon reportedly kept a plague away from the city in the year 593. So as I said, tradition holds that the image was painted by St. Luke and brought back from the Holy Land by St. Helena, the mother of Emperor Constantine. One of the really cool things about this church that I find fascinating is that the ceiling is lined with gold. And that gold was the first gold brought from the Americas by Christopher Columbus and given to Spain's King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella, who gave it to Pope Alexander VI, who was a Spaniard. He was of Spanish descent. And the Pope lined the ceiling with that gold. This is also the location where Pope St. Francis, St. Pius V, prayed the rosary that won the Battle of Lepanto for Catholics who were outnumbered by Ottoman forces in the year 1571. So that was the Feast of Our Lady of Victory. And this is a special church for our own current Pope, Pope Francis. The day after he was elected, he went straight there to pray to the Blessed Mother. And before and after every foreign trip he takes, he visits that church to pray. He said that he wishes to be buried here at St. Mary Major.
Absolutely amazing. We're talking today with Claudia McAdam about her brand new book, The Miracle of the August Snow, which led to the building, the miracle did anyway, of the Basilica of St. Mary Major. So many incredible details of that church, and you mentioned it's Pope Francis's favorite and his favorite icon to pray in front of for various reasons. So absolutely amazing. I think that anybody who visits that basilica would want to know the big question of how did this basilica come to be? Why is it here? And what's the story behind it? In your book, The Miracle of the August Snow, tells people a little bit of the story behind the building of this great church. And so we have to ask, where can people get this book about and learn about you and your other projects?
Sure. The book is published by Our Sunday Visitor, so it's available at osbcatholicbookstore.com. Also, online retailers or your local Catholic bookstore or gift shop can get it for you if they don't have it. My website has links to where you can purchase it as well, and that's claudiamcadam.com. And also on my website, if you'd like to see a book trailer, so get a little insight into what this book is about. This book is 72 pages, paperback, and there's some spot illustrations, some color illustrations throughout. So you can get a look-see into the book through the book trailer. And I also make available at my website, at no charge, a free discussion and activities guide for this book. So it's a dozen pages of activities that kids can do, and then questions that help them dig deeper into how are they like these main characters in this story, and how is their faith impacted by miracles, or, you know, just relate them to the story in a deeper way. So that's available for all my books. I produce a discussion and activities guide that I hope people can use, and I know schools and homeschoolers and families do use those to go deeper into my books.
Wonderful. Those are some great resources. Well, we're so grateful to you, Claudia McAdam, for putting together this book, The Miracle of the August Snow, from Our Sunday Visitor, and for joining us on today's program. Thanks so much.
Thank you. God bless you and all your listeners.
God bless. That was Claudia McAdam joining us to talk about The Miracle of the August Snow. You can check out her website, claudiamcadam.com, or go to osv.com to pick up this book, The Miracle of the August Snow. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Yeah, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting those emails in my inbox. I still think I have the strangest inbox of anybody you'll ever meet. But I also like getting questions when I give talks. So I give presentations around the country, maybe 20 different places per year, where I travel around to different Catholic parishes or shrines or events, and I give a talk for about 45 minutes, and then afterwards, I open the floor up for questions. It's so interesting to see what people are thinking about in the world of miracles, and I do my best to answer them.
So in order for me to speak at your parish or your event, you can go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and click on the contact tab. You can send me a message that way, and maybe I'll be speaking in your area sometime soon. So let's take a look at the mailbag for the question for this week. The question is from David. David asks, are there any members of the Italian monarchy who are saints, like members of the monarchies in France, Saint Louis, in Hungary, Saint Stephen and Saint Elizabeth, Poland and Lithuania, Kazimir, Russia, Galitzin, and maybe others? Sincerely, David. Well, thanks, David, for your great question. It's a tricky one. Of course, the country of Italy is very modern. It was previously the Papal States. And so we have to go back to Amadeus IX, who was the Duke of Savoy, and Savoy later became part of Italy. So Amadeus IX, he was born in 1435 and died in 1472. He was nicknamed the Happy, and he was the Duke of Savoy from 1465 to 72. And the Catholic Church venerates him with a liturgical feast on March 30th. And he was presented as a holy prince, known for his charity and his concern for the poor. Amadeus IX was beatified on March 3rd, 1677, by Pope Innocent XI. And that's the answer to your question. There may be others that I'm not aware of. If there are other Italian monarchs who became saints, please send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com. But that's my best shot at getting you an answer, David, about Italians who were monarchs and saints. Maybe there's others. If you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Fatima May 13th or Guadalupe December 12th or Lourdes February 11th, but there's a different other Marian devotion for each and every day of the calendar year. And perhaps it lines up to a feast day or the anniversary of a miracle, perhaps the building of a basilica or other big event. But for each and every day, there's a way that we can honor and remember Mary all around the world. And so for today's date, we've got the life-giving spring from Zeytinburnu in Turkey in the year 460. A tradition around 1320 holds that the sacred spring outside Constantinople was dedicated to the Mother of God in the early Christian period. It was nestled amongst the plane and cypress trees near the Golden Gate, but it was overgrown, slimy, and forgotten by April 4th, 450, when a soldier named Leo Marcullus stopped there to help a lost and thirsty blind man. Leo heard a voice say to take the water and give it to the thirsty man, and take the slime and put it on the man's eyes. The voice also asked that he build a temple there, and Leo found the spring, restored the sight to the blind man with the mud, and after becoming emperor in 457, built a church at the spot in commemoration of its dedication in 460, the Mother of God as life-giving spring, on the Friday after Easter. And that is the life-giving spring from Zeytinburnu in Turkey in the year 460. For more information on this fascinating devotion, or any of the hundreds of other Marian feast days all around the world, go to 365dayswithmary.com. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week where we talk about miracles from around the world throughout history that line up to the day's date. And today's date is August 10th, and there is a blood-melting miracle in an Italian village. So Amaceno, it's a tiny village located in the province of Frosinone between Rome and Naples. It has a mystical secret that locals say question the laws of nature. And the villagers venerate a glass vial, an ampule, that's said to contain a saint's blood that is regularly involved in what they deem to be a miracle. And over the past four centuries, every year, sometimes even more than once, what is believed to be blood and flesh of Saint Lawrence liquefies, turning from a dense, dark brownish lump to a bright, shiny, ruby-red fluid mixed with other elements. And it's supposedly a reliable occurrence. Every summer between August 8th and 10th, the liquefaction occurs. Then around August 12th, the blood starts to solidify again. And it's a big celebration in the village, and families get together, pray, and celebrate with lavish meals. And the people from the nearby villages take part in the religious parades, which wind through Amaceno's twisted alleyways, up and down the steps, which connect layers of stone dwellings covered in ivy and flower pots. And the parades take place at night under a shower of shooting stars. And so we all heard of St. Januarius, but this is probably a new feast day for some of you. St. Lawrence was said to have been executed in Rome on August 10th, around the year 258, under the Roman Emperor Valerian. He was charred on a grill, and according to legend, he said, "Turn me over, I'm done on this side." And that led to him to be named the patron saint of comedians. But that aside, during the liquefaction days, the relic is taken out and put on display, and it is if visitors request to see it, it can be shown any day of the year. Who knows, maybe we'll go there and shoot an explore episode. Pretty fascinating stuff. And so that is the miracle of the day, the liquefaction of the blood of St. Lawrence in Amiceno, Italy. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We do this every week where we talk about those people on the path to sainthood. We're talking about servants of God, venerables, and blesseds before they have all their miracles and are declared a saint by Rome. And so we always try to keep you up to date on the sainthood news. And Pope Francis received an audience, His Eminence Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect of the Dicastery of the Causes of Saints. And during this audience, the Pope authorized this dicastery to promulgate a decree regarding the heroic virtues of the servant of God, Maria Constanza Zauli, born Palma Pasqua. She's a professed nun of the Handmaids of the Sacred Heart and founder of the Handmaid Adorers of the Blessed Sacrament. She was born on April 17, 1886, in Faenza, and died in Bologna, in Italy, and she died on April 28, 1954. And according to the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints website, she's a professed nun of the Handmaids of the Sacred Heart and founder of the Handmaids, Adorers of the Blessed Sacrament. She nourished her faith, which had blossomed in her family and parish environment, strengthening it in painful trials she endured throughout her life. The heart of her spirituality was her ardor for the Blessed Sacrament, defined as the sun that illuminates all of existence. So she's now known as Venerable Maria Costanza Zauli, and with one miracle, she will be Blessed Maria Costanza Zauli. For more information on They Might Be Saints, go to the website, theymightbesaints.com. And the Might Be Saint of the Day, that's the person whose death anniversary or feast day lines up exactly to the day's date. For today, we have Blessed Arcangelus Piacentini, who lived from 1390 to 1460 in Italy. And he was born around 1390 at Catalfirmi in Sicily in Italy. And he was born to nobility, known as a quiet and pious child. And it was no surprise when he went to live as a hermit in a cave near the church of Santa Maria del Gubbino in Sicily. And his reputation for holiness spread. And the young hermit attracted would-be spiritual students, which caused him to move to El Camo to get away from them. His reputation went with him, and he was asked to restore broken-down shelters for the poor in the area. When the job was finished, Arcangelo returned to his hermitage. However, Pope Martin V, working to restore papal authority, decreed that all hermits in Sicily should join approved religious orders. And so, Arcangelo joined the Franciscans in Palermo, receiving the habit from Blessed Matthew of Girgenti. He was a priest. He was assigned to establish a new Franciscan house in El Camo. He was part of the structures he had helped to restore. He led both of his brothers and the laity by his example, supported Franciscans throughout Sicily, turned down the bishopric in El Camo, and spent his last days helping Blessed Matthew. And he died on August 10th, 1460, in El Camo in Italy of natural causes, and he was beatified by Pope Gregory the 16th on September 9th, 1836. With one miracle, Blessed Arcangelus Piacentini will become Saint Arcangelus. For more information on They Might Be Saints and when the next episodes will air on EWTN, go to theymightbesaints.com. And this week, we have They Might Be Saints Rhoda Wise. In Canton, Ohio, Rhoda Wise was well known as a mystic with many spiritual gifts and healing miracles. One of them was experienced by Rita Rizzo, the future Mother Angelica. I'll be relating her remarkable story. Check this one out, They Might Be Saints Rhoda Wise, this Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about the little Cajun saint, servant of God, Charlene Richard. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We always talk about saints on the show, and in particular future saints and future American saints, and hence the program, They Might Be Saints on EWTN, in the book with Sophia Institute Press, related to future American saints by that title. And so we always like to keep our eye out for people who are on the path to sainthood. And there's actually a very young saint. She's known as the Little Cajun Saint, Charlene Richard, whose death anniversary is August 11th. She died in 1959, and her cause for canonization is underway. It's been approved by the USCCB, and they're looking into her life of heroic virtue, perhaps someday to acknowledge her as a venerable, and then with a miracle, blessed, and a second miracle, a saint. And there are many miracles, actually, that are already being chalked up to the intercession of Charlene Richard. Well, we're so excited today to welcome back to the show Jim Valois, who's got an article forthcoming about Charlene, and to talk to us about the Little Cajun Saint. Welcome back to the program, Jim.
Delighted to be with you, Michael.
And so what drew your attention to this? There's a number of Americans on the path to sainthood. We might put the number up as high as 100 or so. There are numerous cases of servants of God, of people who have been recognized as having lived holy lives, who are on that path to sainthood. What drew your attention to the Little Cajun Saint?
Well, you know, my mother and my sister were telling me about her. Well, my mother, through my sister telling her about this little beautiful saint, which is called the Little Cajun Saint, Charlene Richard. And she's French, and of course I have a French background as well. And so that initially it was interest just because of our French connection, so to speak. And then from there, of course, my sister has a good relationship, a very strong friendship with a cousin of the saint-to-be. And I say saint-to-be because she's been approved for the process of canonization by the bishops in 2022, where they actually gave the okay for her cause to go forward.
Absolutely. And so tell us a little bit about her story. How does her story begin? And what was her early life like? And of course, she was a young saint. So tell us a little bit about Charlene Richard.
Charlene, yes. You know, Charlene was a very normal Cajun girl growing up in the 1950s. She grew up in on a farm in southeast Louisiana. And she grew up you know, without electricity, but yet a really neat and orderly home. And she also was known for being very exuberant. Time magazine had a nice piece. They actually got a very nice article on her. And she was known for being exuberant and very friendly. And, you know, Charlene was devout. She would pray every night on her makeshift altar. She would pray the rosary. And so she lived a devout life, and her family lived a devout life. And typically in those times, the boys were in the, you know, served at the altar, and the girls served in the choir. So very reflective of the strong faith that is very much a part of the Cajun culture.
Wonderful. And so we see that Charlene's cause for canonization has been moved forward. It's been recognized by the USCCB, as they do for all the American causes. We always ask the question, when somebody who is considered to be a young saint, what were the virtues, or what was the life of holiness like that would lead people to recognize her potentially as a saint?
That's a great question, Michael. I would say one of the things that she was known for is she would stand up for those that were being abused. So she would stand up against bullies. And I know that seems like a simple thing, and a lot of young people have done that, but she would do it in a way that would show, you know, that she was not going to tolerate this. And she was also a person who liked to achieve. So it shows her desire to achieve things, reach goals. She was head of her team in basketball. She loved sports, both, you know, baseball and basketball and horseback riding. And so she was known for that, you know, that type of strong emphasis on achievement. So, and I know that seems maybe a little counterintuitive to being a saint, but she had the personality where she was devoted, but she was very, very human. And I think you see this in the saints all the time, this devotedness, but this human. And they didn't deny, like, she enjoyed dancing to Little Richard and to Elvis Presley. And yet, at the same time, you know, she would talk to her grandmother about how to be a saint, as great a saint as Saint Teresa of Lisieux. And so her desire to be a saint was in itself saintly. And so she had this strong desire, and she would also, you know, she did her duty. She did her daily duty. So I would say that's one of the signs of a saint, is they do their daily duty.
Amazing. And she died at the age of 12. She was diagnosed just 2 weeks before her death with acute lymphatic leukemia. And after her death, I think we might say that she died in fama sanctitatis, in the fame of sanctity, because there's been a great groundswell of support for her cause for canonization. Many people going to her gravesite, you might say hundreds and hundreds of people going each week. And there was a mass celebrated at her grave with 4,000 people for the 30th anniversary of her death. So there's been this great groundswell of support, believing in the holiness of this young girl. And of course, people have been praying for miracles. Tell us a little bit about some of these miracles. Now, none of them are approved by the church yet, because that's not at the stage of her canonization. But tell us about some of these claims of miracles that are being attributed to young Charlene.
Sure. One thing, I think in the tribunal office, they have 1,600 different cases pending. And one of them, for example, is a young mother that had a baby born Down syndrome. And this mother felt that she wanted her, you know, maybe she didn't feel called to that kind of life, to care for a Down syndrome baby, although they bring so much to the world that we need them so deeply. But at this particular mother felt that she was praying for, after her baby was born, she prayed to Charlene that her child would have a normal childhood, just like Charlene had. And the doctor, the pediatrician, came in, and he bust into tears because he saw the baby was normal after being born Down syndrome. Now, that sounds incredible, but that's the testimony that we have of a well-respected pediatrician and others that saw this miracle happen. And so a baby born that with Down syndrome gets healed totally and is a normal baby after 6 hours of being born.
Yeah, that truly and amazing. And I know that there are other miracle stories as well. Yes. Like you say, many hundreds of miracle stories of people with the prayer cards and praying to her for her intercession. And what can we learn from the life of Charlene Richard? Obviously, she's a young saint, and as we talked about, she has these virtues. But what can we learn, take away from her life as we reflect on her and perhaps pray for her intercession?
You know, one thing I think we can learn is to be learners. Like Charlene was willing to learn. the chaplain, Father Brennan, and he taught her redemptive suffering because he was trying to find a way to break the news that the parents had asked him to tell Charlene that she had 13 days to live. That was her life expectancy when she was given the diagnosis of leukemia. And so when he decided to, or he was going to break the news, he wanted to find a way to talk with her, to help her. And he came up with the idea to talk to her about redemptive suffering. And Charlene was a learner. She took in that suffering, you know, that learning about redemptive suffering. And every day she would ask Father Brennan who she could offer the suffering for, whether it was for a conversion or whether it was for a healing of someone that Father would recommend. And both Father Brennan and Sister Teresita Crowley, who was the head of pediatrics, they can testify that every person that she prayed for conversion or for healing, was converted or healed. I know that sounds amazing, but that's their testimony.
Yeah, truly, truly an amazing story. We've been talking today about Charlene Richard, who died on August 11th, 1959. We're right around her death anniversary at this time. And she's known as the Little Cajun Saint. People can go to the CharleneRichardFoundation.com for more information on her life. And I know, Jim, you have an article that'll be forthcoming about the life of Charlene. And you also have a new book that's out, Our Lady's Prophecies, God's Messages for Our Time, a book about Our Lady of Good Success from Quito, Ecuador. Tell us a little bit about your projects going forward.
Sure. Thank you, Michael, for that. Our Lady of Good Success speaks about prophecies that are related to our time. And so it's it's a very short book. I didn't make it a long book so I could make it accessible to people. But, and also, I wanted to put the prophecies right in the book so people could read them, and I commented on some of them. But the prophecy also entails where Our Lady asked the main person, main visionary, Mother Mariana, to be a victim soul for our time, for our century, and in this period that we're in, the 20th and 21st century, this era. And Mother Mariana willingly accepted to be a victim soul. She could have stayed in heaven, but she died at that point, and she was given the choice to stay in heaven or to come back and be a victim soul during her time for our time. So we owe her a great debt of gratitude. And she, again, like Charlene Richard, she offered her life and her suffering for the good of our time and the good of what's happening in the crisis that we're all in.
Yeah, truly, truly amazing. And I was just there, as you know, Jim, in Quito, Ecuador. I was at the grave of Mother Mariana and that convent there, the Concepcionista convent there in Quito, Ecuador. An amazing life and someone also on the path to sainthood. Well, we're so grateful to you, Jim Valoy, for joining us today to tell us about the little Cajun saint, Charlene Richard. She's not well known, but I'm quite sure as her cause moves along, Americans will be paying attention to her. So thank you so much, Jim, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you very much, Michael, for having this show and for having me on.
God bless. That was Jim Valoy talking to us about Charlene Richard and her cause for canonization. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio. Check out the audio archives and download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Jim Valoy, for talking to us about Charlene Richard and her cause for canonization, and also The Miracle of the August Snow by Claudia McAdam, talking to us about the miracle that led to the building of the Basilica of St. Mary Major. Check out my program, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. The next episode is about Le Puy. I'll be investigating the supernatural experiences of Benedicta Rencorel, In 1664, the Virgin Mary gave her messages about prayer for the conversion of sinners and visited her for the rest of her life. So check that one out. Explore with the Miracle Hunter on August 17th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter. We're from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events. Whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.